Good afternoon. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is libraries, books, reading, dinosaurs. Is that all said? Stuff all going out of date? Are we going to all be electronic and have chips in our head or whatever, or just watch TV and Netflix? I don't think so. I think a lot of people are still interested in books and whatever form they're in. And that's going to be our topic today. Our guest is Nancy Pearl, who is, we call on the website, Super Librarian, and it's a good name for her. I don't know how many librarians have an action figure. She started the whole movement to get communities to read together, which is something we're going to be doing in Anchorage. She's written a number of top-selling books about reading and making recommendations, and we're going to talk about some great Alaskan books to read, and hoping that you'll get on the radio with us to talk about your favorite books and how you use the library and maybe what you think the library should be. So, Nancy Pearl, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
And as a super librarian with the action figure, I'm very impressed with the rippling muscles and the super costume that you're wearing here
right.
on the radio. Yes.
I dressed deliberately.
Oh, yes. And so you were giving a talk this evening at the library at the Wilda Marston Theater at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
And that's open to the public.
It is. Free.
Yes. And you were the guest of the Anchorage Library Foundation.
Right.
And I need to disclose that I'm involved with the Library Foundation. I think most people know I'm a big library supporter, and also that the Library Foundation is a nonprofit contributor to KSKA's programming. So just making sure to disclose that to everyone. So tell me, you started your career as a mild-mannered librarian in Seattle.
Oh, actually in Detroit. I was a children's librarian in Detroit.
Well, how did tell us the story of how you got from there to being on NPR recommending books and writing your own books and all the different things that you've done. What was the sort of catalyst to get from one to the other?
I think the catalyst was that all I've ever liked to do in my life is talk to people about books. And it's always seemed to me that the best part of being a librarian is sharing books with people and listening to what they like and making connections with other books that they might enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a librarian in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I started doing the local public radio station, a half an hour radio show about books and interviewing authors. And then when I moved to Seattle, the program director in Tulsa sent a tape of my shows to the program director in Seattle and said, have her on live. She has no fear.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, that's a great compliment. And then, I don't even remember how the morning edition part came about, but that's just so much fun. And it gives me a chance. Early on in my radio career, I decided not to talk about books that I didn't like or that I didn't recommend, because,
mm-hmm.
With radio, you get like 9 minutes on Morning Edition, and I thought, why should I
and
waste?
That's a lot.
And that's a lot. And, why should I waste the listener's time in talking about a book that I don't think they ought to read when there are so many unheralded books that
mm-hmm.
I would love to put in people's hands.
Yeah. So you're reading and you're finding books that you feel positively about, and then you're trying to match that book to a particular person, a particular interest.
Or a particular kind of reader, because mm-hmm. I think people read for different reasons. I think some people read because it's the characters that they want to look into their lives or discover more things about them. Other people are really interested in fast-moving thriller, that kind of thing. They just want the experience of turning the pages and finding out what happens next. And people who read for language, who just love copying down sentences or paragraphs in a book, and then setting, people who love that, who want to feel like I was there.
Mm-hmm.
One librarian I had lunch with yesterday said she read The Good Earth as a teenager, and she said it just took her to China. And and that's exactly what those kinds of books can do.
I find that's still, even though I am an English major, I'm a writer, I'm immersed in books all the time, I often have a hard time finding something I want to read, and the computer doesn't always do it for you. There's something about that human connection that's important.
Absolutely, and I one of the things that I've done since I left the Seattle Public Library is going around the world, actually, now talking about how to do that, how to listen to what you like and then make suggestions, not based on what I like, but from all the knowledge that you pick up listening to other people and everything.
Well, listeners, if you're looking for a good book, we've got the world's expert here on recommending books, Nancy Pearl, super librarian, that's what I'm going to stick with. And you can get involved in our conversation by calling 550-8433 in Anchorage. If you're outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. So in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I will, I usually read every email we get and usually get all the callers on. So if you have interest in books, and I hope most people would, please call in. So tell me about the evolution or the birth of this community read concept. Where did that concept come from?
Well, in 1998, the Seattle Public Library got a grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund to be part of a group of 8 libraries and literary centers around the country to create new audiences for literature. And we got to design our own programs or figure out what we wanted to do. The Wallace Foundation is always so good to work with because they understand the importance of planning. So they give you money for a year's planning. So we were able to hire a consultant to help us sort of think through these sort of inchoate ideas that, mm-hmm. that I had about what I wanted to do. And I really believe that book discussions are a wonderful way to bring a diverse group of people together, diversity of religion, age, ethnicity, backgrounds, and to give them something real to talk about. Their responses to a particular book can just help that sort of sense of community develop among strangers, and especially having those book discussions in public places like libraries, I think just speaks to all sorts of needs. And I'm, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds a little hokey, but I sort of think that starting to discuss a book can only lead to more civil discourse and ultimately peace in the Middle East. That's what
right.
I think.
Well, I'm just curious as to which was the thing that came first, the desire to build community or the desire to sort of build excitement and connections with the library?
Both together. And our goal in picking the books that we picked for the years that I was there was to really pick books that led themselves to good discussions. So we didn't want bestsellers. We didn't want books that people read in high school. So we didn't pick classics deliberately. And partly also it just went along with my feeling that what my niche in this whole book reviewing, talking about books industry, what my niche is really to help people find books they wouldn't find otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Now I'd like to go to a caller, and actually John is someone that I hoped would call, John Deedy with the University of Alaska Anchorage, and he was kind enough to choose one of my books as their book of the year for discussion in a past year, and I know that they've sort of followed the same pattern of reading together. John, thanks for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you, Charles, and thanks for having a great show about books. I'm a passionate fanatic as well. But yes, you did mention our UAA and APU Books of the Year program, which is very similar to what Nancy was talking about. Is this is our sixth year, and the thing we do is we pick a theme that resonates with people and then try to pick 2 books that go along with that. And then focus, because even though we work with college students, we find that they don't read as much as we would like them to. And then we focus in many ways on promoting the theme and getting people to talk about the theme, and the books just support that.
Mm-hmm.
So our theme this year is money and morality.
Mm-hmm. And I know you're reading a book by,
a book by Michael Lewis.
Right, that's a terrific book. I just read that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a good
reading
writer.
The Working Poor by David Shipler. So we have sort of both ends of the spectrum. But the other thing that you've also touched on and where we're working with the library is I think books need high touch as well, not just, you know, whether it be high tech in an e-reader or low tech in turning a page. So we're having a forum tomorrow night here on campus about affordable child care and the working poor. And then we have a partnership with the LUSAC Library doing one conversational salon a month about the working poor this year. The next one's on October 18th, and people can just come into the library. They don't have to have read the books. They just come in and talk about, the one coming up is about measuring inequality in the community.
Well, how do you deal with
I think just the act of people talking about the theme and talking about what's important to them leads them to the books and other cool books on the same subject.
I'd be interested in hearing both of you answer this question. The selection of the book, to a large extent, determines the direction of the conversation, I would think, and the two books that UAA is reading, I would think, would push you in the direction of thinking, well, there's something wrong with the economy. We need to have a different kind of economy or different structured economy. I know The Big Short is about the financial crisis, how it came about, and if you are not mad when you're done reading it, you probably are a Wall Street financier, you know. How do you view that as okay, that you're sort of pointing the direction of the conversation one direction or another, or are you just sort of putting a point of view out there for people to respond to? And I guess I'll let Nancy answer first.
I think in a case like that, when you're choosing nonfiction to read, you're talking about the subject, and people are going to have different responses to the subject. And I think that that's fine. You're putting those books out there. Those are the author's points of view. You're not necessarily endorsing them. And you're there to help facilitate discussion and not to lead the discussion down various paths.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. John, how do you feel about that?
And I agree with Nancy. Our books program came out of our Difficult Dialogues initiative, which was initially funded by the Ford Foundation. And we don't pick books that are polemics. Even though The Big Short does have a point of view, I think he has a sense of balance, and he tries to bring out both sides. And that's certainly true about the working poor. So if a book just has a very strident point of view, we stay away from it, because there really isn't any dialogue that occurs. You just either agree with the book or you don't.
Right.
But a book that's got a more nuanced, balanced point of view, people can respond to in a variety of ways, and they agree with some parts of it and not agree with others, and that just leads to a great dialogue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's another question I'd like both of you to respond to, and starting again with Nancy. How do you know when you've done one of these programs if it's worked? In other words, you want to expose more people to books and you want to build community. Is there any way of measuring that other than just the fact that people feel good at the end of it?
I think you can do a qualitative evaluation sheet, and ask directly, did this discussion lead you to want to read other books about the topic? Would you read other books by the different authors? David Shipler wrote a wonderful book before he wrote The Working Poor called Arab and Jew, which is one of those very interesting, as even-handed as you could be, but one of those books about the Middle East that I was just thinking about when I was listening to that. So I think you can evaluate I think feeling good is not to be discounted as being important, but I think partly it's that you don't know what's going to happen. It's the exposure to the books, and I kind of look at every book that somebody reads as the beginning of a journey, and you're not sure where that journey will take them. But it would be awfully nice if they would keep in touch on the way and let you know what was the next book they picked up.
Yeah. John, how do you measure success or lack thereof?
Well, that's a tough one. I agree with Nancy is that the dialogue and the books are just the beginning of the journey. And especially in a university environment, you want to encourage that journey. So we made one big change this year because we found that having a one-year books program, we were just outrunning everybody. By the time people had read the books and were beginning to talk about them, we were already selecting the next books for the next year. So we've changed to a two-year program, and we're hoping by having the same books for 2 years, people can either pick one or the other, but by the end of 2 years, maybe they will have read both, and we can do a lot more programming, a lot more opportunities for discussion, and, by maybe in the second year, people will say, well, these two books are great, and then I read this one, and, we can sort of enrich the discussion with additional libraries. So it's an experiment for us. But I think we would just measure success by the amount of buzz we've generated and the number of, you know, events or dialogues that we've created around this. Mm-hmm. Really, to me, it's not all about the books. It's about the ideas behind the books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for being with us, John. That was John Deedy from the University of Alaska Anchorage in their Book of the Year program. Appreciate your being with us.
Thank you, Charles, and thank you, Nancy.
Oh, you're welcome.
My in-studio guest is Nancy Pearl, who is here to do a talk this evening at the library, the Lusac Library at the Wilda Marston Theater at 6 o'clock. And your topic is?
The Perils and Pleasures of a Life of Reading. It's a very moving, funny talk.
All right. And you've been working with library staff and doing in-service today?
Uh-huh. Yes. And very rewarding.
Great. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, the number here is 550-8433. That's the in-town number, out-of-town, 888-353-5752. I want to, another question occurred to me about the community read and having sort of been the author at one of these, and they, you know, there was a big, I did a number of talks, but there's one big public talk, and something that struck me, and not wanting to sound too negative, there are some good questions, but there's also some stuff that was totally off the wall.
Right.
And I wonder how you deal with that in a public library setting when everybody's point of view is valid in the sense that they're all members of the public, but keeping a conversation or having a meaningful dialogue when some folks are just not off the wall or not really tuned into what you're trying to do.
I believe in written questions, and so that you can kind of curate the questions or somebody can curate it for you before you get them, because I think that We tend not to ask questions so much as pontificate about what we believe.
Right.
And I think that derails the conversation. And really, people tend not to enjoy that very much. So whenever I'm hosting an author or whatever I'm doing with the library, I always say we're going to do written questions, and I'll go through and pick out the questions that I think are most universal or most important to ask.
And what size of group do you try to work with?
When
you do that kind of community read program.
Oh, the community read program. Well, you know, in Seattle, it was just when we began, it was just a little library program. We did not, you know, we didn't involve the community. Basically, the first maybe six years, it was just books that I wanted us to read. Uh-huh. So it was just, you know, we never expected that it would catch on.
It's become a huge national thing. Yes, it's done everywhere. Right. We must hear about it all the time.
Yes, and it's so wonderful because every community can adapt it to their own needs. And there's no hard and fast rules about picking a particular kind of book, or you have to do this or you have to do that. And I just love just seeing how it's developed and grown and what people are doing with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you must spend a tremendous amount of time reading.
Well, I don't have a life. Other people have a life, and I don't do anything but read.
Or go to Alaska and
give lectures. Or go to Alaska, right. But reading for me has always been a way to escape. I can't discount the escapism that's in reading for me. But it's been a way to understand the way other people live. It's been a way to, you know, I always say that people, when you walk into a library, you should be able to find yourself on the pages of a book and lose yourself in the pages of a book.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the kind of, that's what reading does for me.
And how do you select your books? Because since you're advising people, you must have to read a very broad range of stuff that maybe you don't even like.
Well, I made it a rule early on that I never finish a book that I'm not enjoying. I think that one of the things about being a librarian and doing this kind of thing is that if I'm going to suggest a book to somebody, it's not necessarily going to be a book that I like or even a book that I finished. And so when I'm reading a book now, and I have to say it's getting harder and harder and harder for me to find books that I like. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so much out there, and the good books are lost within the morass of all the stuff that's being published. But when I'm reading a book, I read it only long, and I'm not enjoying it, I read it only long enough to say what kind of reader would like this book. And if I can answer that, then I feel like, yeah, fine, I know, I can use it, and I don't have to think about it or like it or anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go to a caller now. Eric is calling with a comment about reading. Eric?
Hey, hello. Yes. Nancy, I feel very fortunate that I just stumbled on to turn on the radio, and this program is ongoing. On impulse, I call. I'm one of these. Well, there's two books I'll mention because they're kind of, kind of far spaced, I guess. But my favorite book and my favorite living author, Cormac McCarthy, The Blood Meridian.
Uh huh.
And I tend to be the writer that you talked about that savors the sentences and
right.
And in that book, I've read it probably about 5-6 times. But on the other end of the scale, I also enjoy John D. McDonald's, like the Travis McGee.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
I favor some of his sentences, and usually people don't consider him literary.
Right. And
there you have it. So if you got a book that you want to toss at me, as you better read this, Eric, then I'll probably see if I can find it.
Okay, well, first, for your Cormac McCarthy side of your reading, I would suggest the early Ian McEwan. You know, Ian McEwan became very popular after Atonement, but his early books are very Cormac McCarthy-like in their appeal. And for the John D. McDonald side, I don't know if you've read Lee Child, who's a thriller writer. Have you read all of his? Lee Child?
No, I haven't read any of No, I was saying I haven't read any of Lee Child.
Okay, well, only read, in my opinion, the best are the first seven. So I would say read up through Persuader, and you don't have to read them in order. You can pick up whatever you've lost. But those are really, really, really wonderful and really fast-moving. And the main character is a loner, and he always sort of stumbles into trouble. They're just great. I reread them every year.
Great advice. Well, thanks, Eric. Good call and good question.
Thank you. That's, you know, it's just, anyway, I'll shut up. I guess you're going to move on to the next.
I appreciate your call. And what we'll try to do is make note of the books that Nancy's recommending and put them on the website.
I've written it down here, so I'm all set there. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Eric.
For anybody else, we have alaskapublic.org. It's an amazing website, and if you haven't checked it out, it's really worthwhile. Anyway, scroll down to our show, which is Hometown Alaska. The headline is Nancy Pearl, Super Librarian. And you can get to Nancy's own website, some articles about her, a great little YouTube video where she's recommending books and some other stuff. And when we're done, we will make a point of putting the titles of books that she's recommending today on the site. Now we have a couple of questions about books for kids, and I'd like to start with Melody. Melody, go ahead.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm at Clark Middle School, and we've got about 40 or 60 different languages there. Most kids there are English language learners, and a wonderful librarian, Stacy Cox, who has figured out graphic novels, whether they're based on classic or not, are wonderful ways for kids to get engaged in reading. I teach deaf and hard of hearing kids, and I could hardly get them to read. They came across these because if you want adult readers, you're going to have to get the inspiration when they're younger. And I'm just suggesting that might be a really great way to emphasize and use our money. And when kids get involved in these books, you can hardly keep them in the library. And Nancy, I'm wondering, do you have, I mean, whether it's the Hunger Games or the Vampire series, and I try to read what all the other kids are reading just so we can have discussions about them, by the by or whatever, but it really gets them engaged in reading. And I'm just wondering if you have other suggestions, and I'll take your answer off the air.
For middle school students, Suzanne Collins, who wrote The Hunger Games, before she wrote The Hunger Games trilogy, she wrote a wonderful, wonderful middle school novel called Gregor the Overlander, and it's the beginning of a series, but the first one is really absolutely the best. For teen readers who love The Hunger Games, there's two books out now by Allie Condie, C-O-N-D-I-E, and the first one is called Matched, which is just great. There's also a book called that's coming out this fall called Legend by Marie Lu. So those two are both both really good. What's his name? M.T. Anderson, Tobin Anderson, has a wonderful book called, oh my gosh, it's just, it went out of my head. But Everybody is Wired. So you don't even need to read because banner ads fly through your head just like they do on your computer. It's a one-word title. Darn.
We'll Google it.
Okay. But the first line of that book is, "We went to the moon to have fun, but the moon turned out to really suck." And I can't see a teen starting that book without wanting to go on and read it. It's great. We'll get the title.
All right. I'm working on that as we speak. And now I'd like to go to Heather, who has a question about books for younger kids. Heather?
Hi. I have a son, Owen, who is just kind of learning to read. And he and all of his friends love the Captain Underpants books. And I've introduced him to Dr. Seuss and, you know, all of the standard kind of, I don't know, more acceptable, at least to me, authors. But, you know, he goes back time and time again to Captain Underpants.
Right.
Those are the ones that he loves. And I don't like them. They talk about toilets and just all kinds of gross humor. But I'm just wondering what your view on that is. You know, are they harmful, or should, you know, since he's so enthusiastic, is that the right way to go? What do you think about the Captain Underpants books and that kind of genre?
Well, they're not my favorites. I think that kids can certainly do better than that, but I understand how popular they are. And I think that discouraging your son from reading them is not the best way to turn him into a reader, in my opinion. I think that offering him other books as well would be the Frog and Toad Are Friends by Arnold Lobel, for example, is a really good I can read book. The Peggy Parrish, Amelia Bedelia books are just great too. I mean, those are ones that are really funny and fun, and they're just for beginning readers. So I wouldn't discourage him. I would just make other books available and maybe share those other books with him.
I went through the same thing with my younger son, and we didn't particularly like the books, and then he started to sort of have some vulgar, you know, talk and stuff that we didn't like. And in a way, though, it's a little bit of a learning situation, because it's an opportunity to teach about when it's appropriate to talk about those things and when it's not. And when I realized that was when I realized he was sharing these books with his grandfather, and they were both just guffawing and thought they were hilarious, you know. My dad has a little bit of the 6-year-old in him as well, I guess. And so, I mean, he just for Heather, he came out all right, you know. Now he's 12 years old, and it does not, has not been a lasting problem. But the kids at that age seem to love those
they
books.
They do.
They really do.
Yeah.
Well, that's very reassuring, Charles. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling, Heather. I've just been looking at books by the author you mentioned, M.T. Anderson. I see one-word titles, Thirsty and Feed.
Feed.
And he also is the author of Whales on Stilts, which my son absolutely loved.
Whales on Stilts is another one of my absolutely favorite books. And there's a novel for middle school, young middle school. And my another one of my favorite books is called Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarians by a guy named Brandon Sanderson. And that's the beginning of a series as well. And so funny. But Whales on Stilts is hysterical. It'd be a great read aloud, a great family read aloud.
Another one in that category, which is kind of forgotten, unfortunately, is Joan Aiken.
Oh, yes.
And Wolves of Willoughby Chase.
Yes.
And Nightbirds on Nantucket.
Yes.
Those books are like that, in that they're kind of gothic, a little bit over the top, hilarious.
Right.
Kids can get scared, but they can also laugh.
Yep. And there's a contemporary writer whose books are mostly shelved in fantasy, China Mieville. And I interviewed him, and one of his favorite books, favorite childhood memories, was reading The Wolves of Willoughby Chase.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's just been around for a long time, and it's just wonderful.
So you're reading a lot of children's literature, and what do publishers just send you big boxes of books, and you work your way through it?
They send me huge boxes of books, and I look at everything, and I make an initial determination, which sometimes is right, and sometimes I really have to go back and retrieve that book somehow because I've made a mistake. I shouldn't have gotten rid of it. And I'll try anything, but for me, what's most important is I have to savor the sentences. It has to be well written. And then after that, everything else is negotiable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, this has been a fun conversation. I can't believe half an hour is already over. We're going to be back in a little while. After a break, I'll give those phone numbers if you want to get involved and talk about books. We're going to be talking more about what's happening here in Anchorage, maybe to get into some Alaska books. There's a community read going on here, and I think we may be able to make an announcement about that. So stick with us. We'll be back in just a moment with more of Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, who is an author, a librarian, and is here in Anchorage to do a talk about books and reading this evening at the Wilda Marston Theater at the Lusac Library. And we're adding now another guest, Karen Keller, who is the director of the Anchorage Public Library. And people may have seen recently in the newspaper that she's on her way out after several years as a very successful leader of our library. She's leaving Anchorage, and I think everybody would be sorry to see you go, Karen.
Thank you, Charles. It is a bittersweet. I think I mentioned to Nancy when she asked me about it that Shakespeare said it best: "Parting is such sweet sorrow."
Yeah, and we've got our own community read program coming up, and before we get into that, I want to make sure to give those phone numbers for listeners if you have questions about books. We've got the greatest person you'll ever find to recommend your next book here. She seems to have read everything that's ever been written and to have an opinion on it and also be able to bring it up in her memory, which is a very impressive skill. Nancy Pearl's with us, and your questions are welcome. The local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Karen, what's happening with our community read?
Well, we're continuing on what we hope is a long-standing tradition. This will be our fifth community read. We started off as part of the big read with the National Endowment for the Humanities, and in the last 3 years, we've split off on our own. We've been funded by the Target Corporation, and this year we've selected a committee was formed to select from the community and some librarians to read. Oh, I'm going to need help on the
Persepolis.
Author's, well, the author's
oh, Marjan Satrapi.
Yeah, Persepolis. And actually, our community read starts in February. But we're trying to get people prepared ahead of time, and Nancy Pearl was here to help us get the buzz started. She led a book discussion this afternoon with the library staff to get them enthused. Our community read actually goes through the month of February and middle of March, because we participate in the Iditarod. We send the books on the trail, and the teacher on the trail then works with the community libraries in all the checkpoint villages. So ours is a little unique in the United States, I think. Yeah, community reads are popular, but I don't know how many their books on dog sleds and go out into the...
I think it's fabulous. What a wonderful thing. And it's a great book. And it's a graphic novel. And it really appeals to to teens through adults.
Well, tell us about Persepolis.
Marjan Satrapi is an artist, and she was about... 12 years old when the Iranian Revolution occurred and the Ayatollah Khomeini flew into, took over from the Shah in 1979. And this is the story, her life and her family's life during the revolution. But it's really a coming of age story. And a lot of people haven't read graphic novels. And I know that my initial reaction was they're very hard to read because you don't know where to look first. Do you look at the text or do you look at the picture? But after a while, while, after reading many now, I think you like watching a foreign film, a subtitled film, you just kind of take them both in simultaneously. And it'll be interesting to talk about the artwork, whether it would have worked not as a graphic novel or just as a memoir. I'm pretty thinking that it wouldn't work as well without the picture.
And this is a neat book because it's a window on reality that very few people are aware of. I guess most people have probably forgotten the Iran-Iraq War, which is this horrible war. And here's that war from the perception of a young girl who's seeing it happen. How did you choose this book, Karen? What was the decision process?
Well, as I said, there was a committee of people, and
what drew you to this particular book?
Well, I wasn't on the selection committee, but I'll tell you some of the criterion that we use. We did, so far, the books that we've chosen for Community Read have tended to be fiction. So we tend to pick fiction. Actually, size matters. Really long books don't work well in Community Reads. And another important feature, as Nancy mentioned earlier, is they have to have discussibility. There has to be something, if everybody just sits down and says, oh, I really liked it, it was so nice, then the discussion nearly ends. And so it has to have something that gives it some oomph and a reason for you to want to talk about it. And I think another quality, and it bore fruit today, was someone, this to me is why you bring these books out, why you know, pick something you wouldn't have thought about, is because people say, well, I wouldn't have read it unless you had said it, and I'm glad I did. And that, and they usually will say that either because they really liked it or they didn't. Doesn't matter. But they're just glad that you brought that to their attention and they read the book.
Yeah. It could be hard to get out of your rut. I guess that's a big purpose for libraries, is to help you find something you're not used to. How do people get involved? If someone's just heard this and said, well, I'd like to be involved in the Community Read, what do they do?
All they have to do is read. They can. Clearly, we have lots of copies of the book that are available at the library. And the other thing that we do is we create book club kits so that if you already have an existing book club, you can check out the books. There are usually 6 to 8 titles in it. It includes a reader's guide, and they are checked out for extended periods of time because normally our books would only circulate for about a month. But this one provides, you can check it out for a longer period of time. It includes how to run a discussion group, and then it starts with some questions and to help you get started. And then in addition to the reading portion of it, you don't have to have a book club already in existence. I mean, if you want to meet and start a book club or just have a get together with a group of people just for this book, you can do that. I mean, the Anchorage Public Library, in fact, does have book club kits. We have over 40 of these. So if you got enthused and got started, then you could continue on. And of course, then we'll have a number of programs that will support or encourage people to get involved in it one way or another. This book also happened to be made into a film, so you could go and you can either view the film, you know, with friends or check it out from the library. So, and then we'll have a number of programs too that will tie into it, discussions, the kind of conversations that encourage you to think about some of the topics. And again, a book like this is, one of the criterion is that it's very rich. You can look at it from a number of perspectives. Is it about the war? Yes, it could be. One of the things that came up today in the discussion with the staff that someone said was reading it from the perspective of a mother and how she felt about her child and so forth. Yeah. And someone else was reading it for the history. And it just can
be approached. What if you're sort of new to the community? You don't have a book group. You don't know that many people. Is there a way to sort of get into a...
We do have a book discussion group at LUSEC. It's called the LUSEC Book Club, and they typically will read our Community Read in February.
And they find out about that just by calling LUSEC, or...?
You can. Probably the best way is to look on our website, anchoragelibrary.org, and most of that information there. We also have, that's probably the best and easiest way.
And we'll link that to our website here at alaskapublic.org. Let's go to another call. Corey had a question for our book expert. Corey?
Hi. I'm calling because I'm looking for books like Robin McKinley's book, Sunshine. And wondered if you had any recommendations.
Well, Sunshine happens to be one of my all-time favorite books. And
I too.
Yes. And have you read Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman?
I have.
Did you like that?
I liked Sunshine better.
Uh-huh. But you liked that? That was okay with you?
I did. I just for some reason, the characters in Sunshine resonated for me more than the characters in Neverwhere.
Yeah, the characters in Sunshine are wonderful. Okay, there's a book called Tam Lin, T-A-M, new word, L-I-N, by Pamela Dean. And
I think...
It's
a favorite as well.
Oh, you're kidding. Isn't it wonderful? Such a terrific book. Okay, I see. I'm going to have to go far afield. Okay.
I think you've almost stumped her.
I know. Right. So, and you've read all the other Robin McKinley books?
I have.
And all the Tamara Pierce books, the Becca Cooper books, which I know are for teens but are just so much fun.
They're great. I really enjoy them.
Okay,
it's
so you...
It's so challenging.
So you tell me what I should read.
Ooh, I think an interesting grown-up version of the Tamara Pierce books are some of the Cordelia and Miles books.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
Bujold.
Yeah, by Lois McMaster Bujold. Yes, those are fabulous.
But I've had a hard time figuring out what to recommend to friends who I give Sunshine, and then they want to know what else, and it's like, well, it's not quite like many other vampire books.
Right. Oh, here's one.
Trisha Briggs books.
Yeah, those are not, she's not one of my top favorites. But Those Who Hunt the Night by Barbara Hambly.
Okay, I have not seen those, so I will
okay.
look for them. Thank
it's
you.
It's, so it's older.
We're totally into vampires? Is that what we're
talking
about?
Yeah, this is vampires, right? Right. And then there's a brand new book, if you're willing to go from vampires to werewolves, there's a brand new book by Glenn Duncan called The Last Werewolf.
Okay, Glenn Duncan. I will look for that.
Thank you. Good. But the Barbara Hambly is, I think you'll like.
I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Corey. I haven't gotten into the whole vampire genre, but I think it's amazing.
We tried to tag on to that last year because the book that we selected for our community read last year was Frankenstein. And it went over mildly well. The language was, even though the topic was of contemporary interest, I think the language was still a little difficult for a lot of people to read through.
Yeah. A little off-putting.
Let's go to Kim, who has a question about books for her for two sons.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. I have two boys, 10 and 7, and they're both gifted readers. My oldest, he reads somewhere on a sixth grade level. And my youngest, my 7-year-old, they both just finished reading the Harry Potter series. They haven't loved anything as much as Harry Potter. The oldest one, he basically loves anything that is like scary or sinister. And he's really into Goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just don't like him reading books like that. That's why I love Harry Potter so much, because I felt like the message was good, and I felt comfortable with him reading it. And so I've been really struggling with trying to find reading material for him that's interesting and advanced enough, but that isn't inappropriate. And I feel like I kind of, with my youngest son, finding something that's advanced enough for him to be interested in it, but still appropriate for a 7-year-old, has been really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So. Mm-hmm. If you can recommend something, he loves comic books. He was really into Diary of a Wimpy Kid, but when he was reading it, his behavior really degenerated. So I kind of tried to steer him away from that. And I know that that might not be the best way to handle that. But, you know, I feel like...
Sounds like the issues a lot of parents are going through. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I just, you know, if Nancy has a recommendation for me, I would love it.
Well, I already mentioned Suzanne Collins' Gregor the Overlander. And I think
yes, I did write that down.
Oh, good. I think you would approve of the message. I mean, I think that probably... since you're so, you know, you have such realistic concerns about that I would read all these books myself. Okay. If I were you. And then, you know, just make sure that they're not doing something that you don't want them to do. So Gregor the Overlander would be really good. There's one called Al Capone Does My Shirts by Jennifer with a G, Jennifer Choldenko, Choldenko. And that would be really good for the 10-year-old, I think.
Okay.
Ordinary Jack, which is an older title by Helen Cresswell, is the first of a series, and that's very, very, very funny. Yeah,
Helen Cresswell.
Yeah, C-R-E-S-S, Cresswell.
We're going to try to get as many of these titles on the website as we can. I'm starting to feel a little overwhelmed, but we'll do our best.
Poor Charles has to write these all down while
we're
going
best.
Along.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so impressed with your ability to think of all these books.
Well, and I was going to say, at the Anchor, you know, at your library, Anchorage Public Library, has a fabulous youth services department, and all of those librarians are just so interested in kids reading, and I know that they could give you many, 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 many suggestions. So,
thanks for the call, Kim. Good question.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I wanted to follow up on Kim's question. You know, the Harry Potter thing is such a phenomenon, and now my oldest son is in college, and that's, you know, what they have in common is Harry Potter, and my youngest daughter is still reading these same books over and over and over again. And at some point, you kind of think, geez, can we move on, right? You know, how I guess the bigger question is, how much can you guide your kids reading without killing the spark or you know, forcing them to read something, which doesn't seem like very productive? Or should you just let it go and whatever happens, happens?
I think in a way you should let it go and use it, as you said, as sort of teaching moments and discussion moments. I think that there's, you know, that one of the things that really, that I would love to see happen is that to have every family read together for a half an hour after dinner. And that you can read anything, a newspaper, you can take turns reading out loud, or you could all read to yourself. But just that sort of sense that this is what families do, is they read and read together and talk about the books, I think is very exciting. You know, the Harry Potter books, it's so interesting because as those original kids that she wrote it for, who were 9 and 10 when the very first one came out, and who ended up, you know, being 18 or 19 or 20 when the last book came out, those books grew up with those kids.
Yeah.
And so Harry Potter 6 and Harry Potter 7 are really dark and very philosophical in nature. Mm-hmm. And so I always, you know, my 9-year-old granddaughter read all the Harry Potter books when she was 7 and 8. And I thought, well, that's great, Sarah, you've read all those books, but I don't want you not to read them again when you're able to really appreciate.
When you'll get it. Yeah, it's not like it's going to hurt them when they're young, but they're just not going to understand
exactly.
It. That's true of a lot of books, isn't
it? It is. And books that were assigned in high school, I mean, why are we assigned these books? They just kill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just
that's
put you
true.
Off them forever.
I just finished reading Anna Karenina, and each time I read it in a different stage of my life, it's a different book. It's just extraordinary. And the same thing with 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Yes.
Karen, did you have a comment?
I was going to ask, when you're recommending for things like this, do you ever, for kids that are reading now, do you ever have them go backwards? I mean, when you started thinking, I thought, well, you know, do they read the Hardy Boys? You know, would they be Nancy Drew or London's To Build a Fire? Would one of her kids be, do you go back to the classics, or are you trying to find contemporary things?
No, definitely the classics as well. And Hatchet by Gary Paulson would be a great book for the 10-year-old to read. I think that the point that you made, Charles, about how every time you read Anna Karenina, and of course now it's out in this gorgeous new translation, I think I could make a good argument for saying there's no such thing as rereading a book, because every time you read a book, you're a different person.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is it, stepping in the water.
I'm kind of... Great literature to me is great for a reason. You know, there are a lot of books I think if I read them again, and probably might not get that much out of them.
Right.
But then there are certain books that really stand above others, and that you'll never really fully absorb. Having a fun discussion today with Nancy Pearl, who is a librarian and author, and obviously has an encyclopedic knowledge of contemporary literature, and Karen Keller, who is the director of the Anchorage Public Library. And Nancy is giving a talk tonight at 6 o'clock in the Wilden Marson Theater at the library. It's free to the public, and it sounds like it's going to be really interesting, so I recommend attending. Here's a question from email. Could you suggest a few books for me? Books I've loved are Alexandra Fuller's Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, Ian Hersey's Ali's Infidel, Kite Runner, and Out of Africa. A Sense of Place, Adventure, View of People's Daily Life, and History all interest me.
There's a wonderful Iranian-American author named Gina Nahai, N-A-H-A-I, and I think that you would like that. I actually think Persepolis would be a really good book to pick up, because I think that that's the sense of history and really the adventure of growing up is good. Alexander Fuller has a brand new follow-up to Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, which is either just out or coming out very, very soon. Oh, gosh, there are so many.
What would you think of Lawrence Durrell's The Alexandria
Quartet?
Oh,
the Alexandria Quartet, right. Now, there's
a strong sense of place.
Absolutely, yes. Or
and it'll get you through a long winter, right?
Yeah, right. Or Mahfouz's Egyptian, the Cairo Trilogy, I guess it's called. Or Paul Scott's The Raj Quartet, if you want to go
another
to a different, a different place.
And now we have Alan on the line. Alan?
Yes, hello. So I am from Southeast Alaska, village of Yakutat, and the book that really got me into reading when I was in elementary school was The Hobbit. Our teacher chose that book to read to us every day during reading time, and I have a few older sisters, and luckily my oldest one, she was a really into books, so I grew up, you know, having all of her books to read, and my concern, I guess, was access to books for children in rural places in Alaska. Our library wasn't humongous, and I'm lucky I had my sister's books to read, and I just fell in love with them, and if I hadn't had those books, you know, I probably wouldn't have read as much because the selection in our library wasn't, you know, too big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And that's a good question for Karen Keller, our Anchorage librarian. How is that handled? Is there a way to deal with that?
There is. For very early readers, we, in fact, have a special program that was developed a couple of years ago called Ready to Read, and we actually loan out large tubs of books. And these are sent out to villages, and its postage is paid both ways. For older readers, I would suggest, you know, we definitely do interlibrary loan, and the Anchorage Public Library is a net lender, which means we are compensated from we get grants because we loan out so many books to try and help smaller libraries like that. So you can borrow books from the Anchorage Public Library that way. Through your community library, you can get on and see what we have and request the books, and they'll be sent out. So that's one of the really nice features of being in a cooperative state like this.
And again, you'd access that through the library's own website?
Yes. I mean, if you didn't have internet access at home, you could certainly go to, if you have your community library there, they could get in touch. They have an 800 number that they can call the Anchorage Public Library and request them, but that would be the best way to see what it is you want. If you have a particular title in mind, of course, you know, you can just send that. We have a feature on our website called Ask a Librarian. You can just ask for it that way, too, so...
Sounds like there's resources out there if people know where to look for them, Alan.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for your call. It's a good question. Here's an email question. Actually, two questions. This is one that I should have thought to ask. She says, is Nancy a speed reader?
Oh, am I? I am not a speed reader, but I'll tell you, if you give up on books that you don't like immediately upon noticing that you don't like them, and this doesn't go for book club books and doesn't go for school assignments, but if you just say, I'm only going to read books that I'm really enjoying, then you can get through an enormous number of books and spend your valuable time reading books that you really like.
Well, how long does it take you to make that decision? I mean, because I have this huge pile of books. I just weeded through it on my nightstand, which, you know, was going to collapse.
Right.
And then I finally weeded through and said, you know what? This has been sitting here 2 years. I'm probably not going to pick it up. Is that sort of how you do
it? Yes, exactly. Or I really, you know, I'll read the first. I mean, sometimes I can tell in a page if there's some annoying author tick, or I can see that the editing is terrible, or there's bad grammar or something that just irks me.
Yeah.
I'll give up.
It makes me sick to read bad writing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the same person as Marilyn also asks an interesting question. She says her favorite books are A Tree Grows in Brooklyn and To Kill a Mockingbird, which probably most people have read. Unless I'm mistaken, I believe both authors of both books wrote only those books. Are there others of which I'm unaware? I know Harper Lee didn't write anything else.
No, she didn't. And Betty Smith did. She wrote a novel called Joy in the Morning. But I think it was one of those cases where everything, all of her It's not as good as, let me just say, it's not as good as A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what the, I mean, seems to me what those two books have in common is this just really coming of age of the main character, this scout, and then I can't remember the girl's name in A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, not to, you know, beat a dead horse, but Persepolis is exactly that story.
And some writers just have one great book in them, and it's often that childhood story, which you can tell only once. I'm thinking of How Green Was My Valley is another one that falls in that category of just I'm not as good at you as just pulling these things back.
I know, she's impressive. Yeah.
All of these memoirs, I was saying, for the person who
was
interested.
The Mill and the Floss, I was thinking of.
Or Middlemarch another good one. But like for the person who loved the Alexandra Fuller books,
mm-hmm.
Other great memoir writers, Mary Carr, The Liars Club, is just a wonderful, coming of age memoir. If you want humor, you know, you don't want something too heavy, there's a terrific memoir called A Girl Named Zippy, Z-I-P-P-Y, Growing Up Small in Moreland, Indiana, by Haven Kimmel. And memoir readers, or novel readers, both of those, both types of readers, I think would enjoy those books.
Now, you made a passing comment earlier, which I found curious, which is that you said it's very difficult to find good books because there are so many books out there.
Yes.
And I wonder if fewer good books are actually being published, if there's something wrong with the publishing industry in terms of what it's putting out.
My sad feeling is that perhaps that's the case. I hope it isn't the case. I hope it's the case that there's just so many books. Publishers Weekly, I think, the last figure I read was like 70,000 books in a year published by mainstream publishers. That's not self-publishing or anything. I mean, how can anybody find that? That's why I wrote the Booklust books, to help people find good books
to
read.
And that's something we didn't get into.
Oh, well,
the hour has gone by so quickly.
That's fine.
But you've written a whole series of books giving these kinds of recommendations. Plug your book. We've got just a few seconds left.
I mean, one that I think a lot of the listeners would be interested in, because we had so many calls about children and teen reading, is Book Crush, which is recommended books for kids from birth to 18. And it's all divided up. It's divided by age. And then they're all the four books are divided. The Booklust, More Booklust, and Booklust to Go, and Book Crush are all divided into very quirky categories, which were great fun for me to write.
And folks can find out about Nancy and all of her books on her website, which links through alaskapublic.org. Just scroll down to today's show. I want to thank Nancy Pearl for being with us. Her talk is tonight at 6 at the Wilda Marston Theater at the Lusac Public Library, a free talk. Thank you to Karen Keller,
our librarian, for
being here, and for being here with all these years as our librarian. It's been a great hour, and I've really enjoyed it. Next week on Hometown Alaska, your host will be Kathleen McCoy, and she's going to have roller derby queens in the studio. So slightly different from what we're doing today. You also join us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. You make sure to check out the new website, which I've already mentioned. Pat Diak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor, audio engineer, did a wonderful job. Thanks for joining us. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.